Okay, the recorder is on.
Okay, Dawn, good morning. Good morning, everyone. This is Dawn Russell, Besby SRP Chair. I am now calling this meeting to order on March 24th, 2021 at 10:02 a.m. Welcome all to the Besby SRP Teleconference meeting. Brian will start with introductions. When your name is called, please state that you are present. Go ahead, Brian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everybody. Just as a reminder, this meeting is being recorded. I would ask, if we are getting some background noise, I would ask if you are not speaking, if you could mute your phone. Muting your phone would be *6 to mute it, and then to unmute your phone, it's *6 again to unmute. Because again, we're getting a fair amount of background feedback, and since we have to be a recorded meeting, it's important to try to eliminate that background feedback. So again, please *6 to mute, and then *6 to unmute. I'm just waiting for that feedback to go away, because it's fairly substantial. Oh, that's good. Thank you. Whoever's, all right. So here we go. If you are present, *6 to mute, and then say that you are here. Gary Allen.
Present.
Thank you, Gary. Brandy Alterga. Again, this is Brandy Alterga. Scott Becker.
Here.
Thank you. Michael Martin.
Present.
Thank you. Jay Brown.
Present.
Thank you. John Carnamola.
Here.
Thank you. Jennifer Jenkins. Jennifer Jenkins. Lucretia Johnson.
Here.
Thank you. Philip McGowan.
Present.
Thank you. John McNichol.
Present.
Thank you. Anita Mendoza.
Here.
Okay, thank you. Deborah Reed.
Here.
Thank you. Dennis Regan. Dennis Regan. Eileen.
Dennis Regan is present. I'm sorry, I was on mute.
Thank you, sir. Eileen Rose. Eileen Rose. Dawn Russell.
Present.
Nicole Rico Serrano. Nicole Rico, present?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. And Brian Sigmund is present. Kendra Valente.
Present.
Okay. So hold on, Madam Chair. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. So there are 13 voting members present. Madam Chair, you have a quorum.
Okay. Thank you. All right.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Beth. Is there
Do we have anyone on the line from the public attending today? Yes.
You have Bill DeMayo.
Bill DeMayo.
Okay.
Is there anybody else from the public on the call?
Yes, Francis Lane.
Francis Lutton. Thank you. Is there anybody else on the call?
Mary Burkhardt, the hearing provider.
Thank you, Mary. Anybody else on the call? Member of the public? Okay, Madam Chair, I believe the roll call has now been completed.
Okay. Next on our agenda is public comment. Do we have anyone from the on the line from the public who would like to make a comment? Okay, I'm going to go on to the next item on the agenda then, which is old business. Review and approval of meeting minutes from our December 16th, 2020 meeting. Everyone was emailed a copy of this of the meeting minutes, and I assume that you all had a chance to read them. Do I have a motion to accept the meeting minutes from December 16th, 2020 as they are?
This is Scott. I'll move that we approve.
Okay, do I have a second motion?
This is John McNichol. I second it.
Do we need any discussion? Okay, then we're going to vote now. All in favor of accepting the December 16th, 2020 meeting minutes as they are, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, say nay. Any abstain?
Abstain.
Okay.
I was not present last meeting.
Okay.
Okay, so one.
All right, motion. Excuse me?
I just said one abstention. I just noted that, Madam Chair.
Okay, thank you. Motion passes. All right, we're going to go on to the next item on the agenda, which is work group reports. And the first one is membership, and that is from Lucretia.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, great. I'd like to first start off by welcoming our three new members to our State Rehabilitation Council meeting. And we have two recipients of services. We have first Dennis Regan and also Philip McGarmit. And please don't, I hope I pronounced your last name right, Philip. And we also have Jennifer Jenkins with the Client Assistant Program. So we welcome you all to our meeting, and we thank you for being part of our SRC team. I'm going to move on now to the current vacancies that we have. Presently, we have four, and I'll mention the different categories. The first one is the employer. We have two vacancies. And those two vacancies will be replacing Lori Bartolucci and Amanda Billiet. Two candidates, they were identified and their resumes were submitted already to the governor's office. The next category we have is the Workforce Investment Board, and that would be replacing Kathy Marioni. Currently, we still have go ahead. Were you saying something about the pronunciation of the last name? Okay, I'll continue. This is the Workforce Investment Board, and we would be replacing Kathy Marioni. And currently, we still have an opening there, so a candidate is still needed. And then the last one we have is the Community Provider, and that would be replacing Steve Famiglietti. And we did identify a candidate, and the resume was already submitted to the governor's office. I'm going to now move on to the terms that are expiring for this year, for 2021. We have 9 individuals whose terms are going to be expiring. Now, Brian has heard from most of you, but there's 3 people out there that he still has not heard from. So please send him an email if you're interested in reappointment to a second term. That concludes my report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Lucretia. Does anyone have any questions on membership? Okay, we're going to move on to finance with Scott.
Morning, everyone. These are committed amounts since the last update at the December meeting. At $990 for the National Capital Estate Agency to apply the dues. And then for the SRC chair and vice chair to attend the Council of State Administrators of Vocational Rehab Spring Conference, that's $225. So year to date, grand total $55,040.72. That's it.
Do we have any questions on finance? Okay. Thank you, Scott. Next is consumer satisfaction surveys with Brian.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At this point, I'm going to just remind the state rehab council that it's time to start considering consumer satisfaction survey vendors for the upcoming year. The survey starts with a population of clients who exit the program on July 1. The survey typically started around early October, and it's time to consider an entity to do the satisfaction survey. Previously, there had been a work group that the SRC had convened to look at the survey instrument as well as contemplate if there were alternative approaches to the survey. The current entity, Central Connecticut State University, has been doing the survey for quite a number of years. They did, based on the State Rehab Council's request, shift over to contacting clients on a quarterly basis. The fiscal quarter after they exited the program, so that the services that consumers receive would be more fresh in their mind when they got the call from CCSU. And CCSU has a fairly extensive volume of longitudinal data, so that when they do their survey reporting, they're able to provide comparisons to prior years. So at this point, recognizing that COVID-19 has really made it difficult to move forward with either identifying some other entity that could potentially do the survey or modifying the process by which the survey was done, and given that, you know, where we are in the point in the fiscal year, it would be my recommendation that the council consider continuing with CCSC to get us into the next year, and then hopefully the pandemic will be behind us and there'll be more opportunity for some dialogue. But I, of course, will do whatever the council's pleasure is. So, Madam Chair, I'll turn it back to you.
Well, I wanted to share that I have been a recipient of the consumer satisfaction surveys with CCSU, and I feel they're very professional and patient and kind as well. I think they do an excellent job, and I want to know if we could have a motion to have them continue as our vendors.
This is Deb Reed. I would agree with you, Dawn. I was part of the focus group with Dr. Diana Cohen and giving the feedback. And I think reaching out to the SRC members is a really good thing as well. So I'd like to make a motion that we would CCSU to do our consumer satisfaction survey.
Okay, and that was Deb?
Right.
Okay, do we have a second motion?
Second.
I second the motion.
I think that was Mike second the motion first. Do we need any discussion on this? Okay, we're going to take a vote now. All in favor of keeping CCSU as the vendor for BSB Consumer Satisfaction Survey, say aye.
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 All opposed, say nay. Any abstain? Okay, motion passes.
I will let CCSU know. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next item on the agenda is new business. Mary, are we ready for our VR success story?
I believe they're calling in around 10:15, so I'm not sure.
Actually, Mary, I'm here. I'm waiting for Jesus to call in at 10:20, along with Sean. So I would say we keep going until we hear that they're here, okay?
Okay. Thank you, Barry. So let's move on to the comprehensive needs assessment report with Brian.
Thank you. This will be a long report, so if they're going to be calling in within about 2 minutes, I think I'm going to just introduce the concept of the needs assessment, because I don't want to interrupt them when I do call in. Maybe then that.
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Hang on a minute. I'll kind of wait for Sean, and then we're going to get started.
All right, then.
Thanks, Brian.
You're welcome.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to get started, and Sean will join us. She's the teacher of the visually impaired from Stanford, who works for the town. I would like, though, to introduce to the Betsy State Rehab Council, Jesus Betancourt. Jesus is here to tell us of his journey, which is mentors and being a mentor, challenging himself and overcoming obstacles and sharing his journey with others. He has already worked with Jonathan Richmond and Charlotta Copenhanger, both excellent scholars and exponential. Wow, I think I pronounced that right. Sean, why don't you... Sean, are you with us? Why don't you introduce yourself and then hand it over to Jesus, our star pupil.
Wonderful. Hello, everyone. My name is Sean Auslander. I'm a teacher of the visually impaired in the Stamford, Connecticut at public schools. I have with me one of my star students, Jesus Betancourt, who is a graduating senior at West Hill High School in Stamford, and he is college bound. So he has a wonderful story of the American dream, and I really am going to pass the torch to him because he's the one who knows himself best. Take it away, Jesus.
Hi.
Well,
am I on mute,
or
they get to me?
Jesus, I'm sorry. I was just making a point that I'm going mute. The stage is yours.
Oh, okay. Hello. My name is Jesus, and as Alexander mentioned, that I am a graduate senior, and I was born in Colombia. With my education really was not that great. The technology, here we have so much specific technology that we don't have there. I struggled, but to assignment every day. I did a pen and stylus, and I'm just struggling. My mom moved to the U.S. when I was 9 years old, and I started experiencing this, you know, all these new things. I learned English. I'm sitting with reading my Braille, and I've also learned how to use a talking brother. I upgraded to a Bruno, and now I'm using Bruno Touch, and I'm learning to use a laptop. But as I, you know, grew up here, I've discovered so much stuff that we have here that many countries don't have that can really help a blind individual, blind or visually impaired, really be successful in the school and be in the same team field as other students. So right now, I'm looking at whether you go to NCC, Normal Community College, and continue computer science when they maybe work on humanware. And over this year, I've done many activities above the National Foundation Design. And I've been tutored by two students, Katie and Brian Martin. And I've also been tutoring these last 2 years younger students. And I've also gone to a care center a couple of times. And those programs that I've attended have really helped me to be more independent and have helped me to be who I am today. And I can't wait to continue, you know, my journey, you know, going to college, and then hopefully one day, my goal is to one day go back to Colombia, start there, and help get technology and the accessibility that we need here, that we have here to go there. People who are born in Colombia, who are blind, because they have the same opportunity. Because we, the blindness, our blindness, our vision impaired, the child defines who we are. We need to work hard, but we also need the technology, and we need the assistance. That's my main goal.
Whatever, we also, you know, the health center and Katie, and we work together on things that
without me. So, you know, for example, like, last year I worked with Katie, too, and we worked on, you know, college, you know, applying for scholarships and, like, the process.
For the board, Katie is another student that graduated from Stanford school system 2 years ago. And, you know, there's been a succession of young people mentoring other young people in the Stanford area. And Jesus has also worked with younger blind students, right, Jesus?
Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
Yeah. So I do it, you know, like, whenever I can and I have time, I go to, I love mapping other students and help them with whatever experience. I'm actually one student with again, Braille, like, we did a Braille screen input on the iPad.
Excellent. One last thing, and then I want to give Sean a little bit of a chance to brag about you before our time expires. You're doing some YouTube stuff, right? Some trainings on YouTube. I saw a little bit of that. You want to tell us about that?
Okay, so I have a YouTube channel. So actually, the YouTube channel, like, I guess, like, a year ago. Although, I wonder what you saw what I was really doing on it. It wasn't also, like, a quarantine where I really started to, you know, we're using the technology now, so I thought, like, why don't I make a tech channel where I just put up in, you know, a tutorial. And I'm not posting right now, but hopefully in the summertime, I'm going to continue posting and seeing what I can show to the world more technology to make it easier.
And Sean, it's your turn real quick, but I just want to mention that, I don't know everything, but I know Jesus works with the Leadership Program on Orientation and Mobility. He's also worked with the Vermont LEAD Program, especially for some paid work. Sean, take it from here.
You know, and a couple of things I'll mention, but overall, I'm very proud of Jesus. I feel, you know, with the challenges that he faces being visually impaired, he's also had other challenges. Coming to this country from Colombia, not learning a word of English, I remember him when he came in second grade. He had to learn so much, and he had a lot of challenges. But, you know, the challenges we're always going to face every day, it's just how, you know, we deal with them. And he's really, you know, ease into those. I mean, yes, it's been some frustration, but if you think about learning on a slated stylus, then progressing, you know, learning the English language, and Braille, learning from the Perkins Braille machine, then the Braille notes, then leading to the Braille note touch, and also on the laptop, with, you know, NVDA, he's learning, and all the keyboarding skills there. He's learned it, because it's how he's adapted and in strides. He's really done it with a smile on his face, you know, overall, with a positive attitude. And that's really how he's grown. He enjoys the technology. He loves it. He enjoys being like teacher and mentor. When he's in that role, he's almost a different person. He comes alive, and it's shown. The kids love it, and he enjoys it. Not only that, he's been a member of the NFB in the Stanford chapter. He's kind of stepped up and fought for accessibility rights. He's gone to Hartford, our capital in Connecticut, and in our nation's capital, Washington, D.C., with the NSC to fight for accessibility rights, as he's, you know, first-handedly understanding how some things that on the Internet he can't get accessible, he can't be accessible to. So first-handedly, he's understood that and wants to make changes so that he can be accessible like students who, you know, regular vision. He wants to be on that, like you said, the same playing field. He's also been a live and a note taker on NSC, so he's taken all the notes in the meetings. He's had a role there. He's done work, computer and pre-college work at the Carroll Center up in Massachusetts.
Yeah, I'm done here, but I just want to throw that word Steven. You know,
the dude is a classic example of that team. You know, the whole team, the town, the state, everybody, the national organization, the community providers, is just a great mix.
I'd also like to thank Sean for being here too and being such a great teacher.
Thank you so much. I thank you for having me to tell his story and having that opportunity. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Jesus.
And thank you, Mr. Barry Rita. We appreciate all your help and putting this all together. So thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, since we're going to move on now to the comprehensive needs assessment report from Brian.
Thank you. So I forwarded the comprehensive needs assessment to everyone two, 3 months ago to give folks an opportunity to take a look at it and to go through it. I'm going to highlight some points. Obviously, it's a lengthy report, so I'm not going to spend our time going through every aspect of it. But I think there are some noteworthy things that I wanted to be sure the council members are brought attention to. The comprehensive needs assessment is a document we're required to do this needs assessment once every 3 years. There are goals that the St. Louis Council has developed as part of the state plan process and state plan update process. And the comprehensive needs assessment is one of the most useful tools at the disposal of the St. Louis Council when you start thinking about where you want to focus attention with your state plan goal as we, again, refine the state plan in the mid-year of the 4 years, and then create a whole new section of the state plan once every 4 years. So the first area I want to highlight is minority composition in the state of Connecticut and how best we vote in that program compares to that. In Connecticut, statistical information is indicating that approximately 34.1% of Connecticut residents self-identify having a minority representation. The composition breaks down as 16.9% Hispanic Latino, 12.2% African American, 5% Asian, 0.6% Native American, and 0.1% Hawaiian Pacific Islander. Betsy has a fairly positive correlation to Connecticut demographics, where we're just very slightly under in terms of the overall population. We're at 33.5% versus, again, 34.1%. But in terms of the individual group, the African Americans represent 26% of our client population. And again, that compares to 12.2% in the overall Connecticut demographic. And then we have 20% Hispanic Latino, which compares to 16.9% in the Connecticut population. We are a little bit under in terms of the Asian population. For the state, it's 5%. For Bensie Volk Rehab, it's 3%. And then we are at less than 1% for Native American and Pacific Islander. So that's the overall demographic for the Bensie Volk Rehab program as it compares to the state of Connecticut. So I think that is indicating that, you know, Bensie Volk Rehab is doing the job they need to be doing in terms of outreach to underserved populations and having those individuals get the information they need so they can access services from Bensie Volk Rehab. So that I felt was positive. And Central concluded the same thing. It says he is actively engaging these individuals, and they also found that looking at the demographics of youth, that we're successfully representing the youth population, although in that particular section, they did not give a demographic. So moving and we talk a bit about the pandemic and some of the challenges that the pandemic has raised. And then they come with this conclusion, and it states that it's clear that additional equipment and technology training is needed in the BenQ-DR program to ensure that all clients are equipped and prepared to engage with critical technology in an increasing virtual workplace. And this is something that Mary Burgard and I is discussing, and we wholeheartedly agree. We've been working with Computers for the Blind to get computers more readily available to clients so that they can learn how to use technology in their homes. We're also working collaboratively with some other states on some potential discretionary dollars that are available through the Rehab Services Administration, where part of this initiative, if we get the funding, would be to actually work on a solution for scripting employer-safe software, which is where we encounter some of the greatest challenges in getting jobs accessible for our clients. And this is not just unique to Connecticut. Some of the other state DR agencies for the blind across the country that are also part of this initiative are all in the same situation and saying, if we only had solutions for the scripting and come up with a vendor or a service or individuals that would be able to solve the scripting issue across employers that have a footprint in multiple states, then we could solve, like customer service jobs, where insurance companies have jobs in multiple states. Once it's solved here, it's solved for the individuals that are blind that work for, you know, that company in regardless of the state. And also with the new virtual world, and we have the opinion that probably a lot of jobs are going to remain virtual, it no longer necessarily matters whether you live in Connecticut or, you know, somewhere in the Midwest, if you can do the job virtually. So we wholeheartedly agree with this recommendation, and we are actively working to see if we can come up with a next step forward in trying to solve it. Moving on down, there was an observation that they had that I think is important. I want to address it for a moment, because under the Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act, we report our activity with cases on a quarterly basis. We have to turn in a quarterly report that shows what every single client has had for services during the last quarter. Now, this is a model that's based very closely on the Department of Labor's Wagner-Peiser program, which typically, I think, puts folks through that program at a much more rapid and self-directed pace than what the Public Vocational Rehabilitation Program has previously been. The Voc Rehab Program is more of a process that can be a maintenance process. So, clients don't necessarily every fiscal quarter engage in services, but nonetheless, we feel it's important not to lose track of these individuals because, you know, circumstances change, and sometimes it's like that perfect job opportunity comes up, but it may have taken quite some time for that opportunity. But I think that the Voc Rehab Program nationally, not just in Connecticut, has been feeling a significant amount of pressure to either keep clients constantly engaged, or if they're not engaged, to say, if you don't want to be engaged now, we're going to inactivate your face. And when you want to get engaged, you can come back and ask your face to be reopened. Now, CCSU is acknowledging that that is a pressure that we're kind of having put upon us, and they are encouraging us not to acquiesce to that pressure. They're encouraging us to say, it is okay for patients to remain on the list, for clients to then be ready to engage when they're ready to engage. But we shouldn't necessarily feel compelled to encourage clients to let us close their cases if they're not presently engaged. And this was such a significant recommendation on the part of CCSU that I actually raised it in a very recent call with Rehab Services Administration to tell them that our comprehensive needs assessment is actually telling us that we shouldn't feel pressure to close cases if somebody isn't currently engaged in service. point forward because it was an important point for comprehensive needs assessment to address. Moving on down into the survey, what they found, and this is an interesting observation, which again is one that I think has caused us to take some more rapid action and attention, not just looking at computers that apply, but again, cost-effective computers available that have adaptive technology pre-installed, but also to try and see if we can do something on a broader scale around the intensive training that some clients need and accessibility of employer sites. They found that rehabilitation and adaptive equipment at an all-time low of utilization. It has been down 16.5 percentage points compared to 2019. And it says the sizable decline may be attributed to guidelines regarding home visitation due to COVID-19, which a pandemic would say now is correctly heavily impacted how services could be delivered in the fiscal year. But I also feel that we have rapidly converted to a virtual model of delivering many services. I think this spoke to a bigger issue, which is again why both Mary Ingard and I felt compelled to see if we could address this on a more global scale, and not just on a Connecticut scale, but working in collaboration with some other VR programs sort of applying around the country to see if we can systemically address it. There was also a section on the focus group, and Deb Reed, thank you. You now you were one of the members of the FSC that participated in this focus group, and I think that is wonderful. And in this section of the report, it is acknowledged that the SRC also brought forward access to technology, and technology training has emerged as a key discussion point. Couldn't agree more. The group noted that access to technology and technology training was often not made clear to clients, and there was also consensus that Bessie should reach out to community partners to help devise devices and training the clients, and the clients should be made more aware of what technology services are available to them. Again, so I think you can see the direction it's going in now. It was really important to get this feedback in this written report that allowed us to begin that process of saying right away something needs to be done about this. And so, to Mary Burgard's credit, again, she's been addressing this with the counselors during staff meetings and invited some speakers to come in and talk about that as well. One suggestion they had is for Pesci to develop a package for new clients that includes a guide to the services available for them and a list of contacts to learn more about the VR program. This guide actually does exist. It is on our website, and the counselors do provide it at eligibility for all clients, so I think we have it. If it's something that is somehow falling short, I mean, that's certainly something that we would be happy to revisit, but I did want to say that, you know, there actually is a packet that describes what the services are that are available and how those services can be provided, and it's much shorter than the college level, which is hundreds of pages. We wanted a quick guide to just give like a short page on each one of the major services. There is a concern that some clients may not have anyone to rely on for support during this time of COVID. So their CPSC is recommending that they should aim to contact these individuals frequently to ensure that they are receiving the support they need. And this is a recommendation that I feel that the Voc Rehab program has been doing a good amount of outreach to try and, you know, I mentioned that quarterly report, to check in with clients to the extent that they can, you know, reach certain clients. It's not always easy to reach folks, but to the extent that they can speak to folks, how things going, are there any services you need? But I think that this is something that is in place, but I think that it's affirmed through this survey how important that is, particularly during this time of COVID where there is isolation. And then there's a section, the final section is on recommendations. And here's their recommendations. And again, when the counselors are thinking about their goals for the future, what you want to see services to iDoctor. So you may have seen that we, in the last month or so, we just put out the most recent VR success story, and that's posted on our website. We now actually six of them up there. And I've also reached out to the Connecticut Optometric Association and wrote up a little blurb about how we are in need of low vision doctors. We really need more low vision doctors. And also reminding eye doctors about the requirement of sleep fancy to make referrals to them, see if they can turn to someone legally blind. So that's, you know, there's always room for more outreach and more success stories, but I did want everybody to know that we've already, you know, been working on this one. They concluded, thank you for hosting a virtual program with Brian to ask the subject VR outcomes just to current clients about their experiences. The goal of these meetings is to encourage current clients to become more engaged with services that we provide, hopefully leading to successful VR outcomes. This programming is extremely beneficial and should be expanded up where possible. And with that in mind, I do want to thank right now Dawn Russell, Lucretia Jones, and John Carnamoli for their willingness to be part of the virtual panel that we had. Reach out to Transition HD if we get very positive feedback. I understand that it's been continued and replicated, and I think that these are the kinds of activities that are highly important. They do motivate clients. Hearing from folks who are successfully employed, who are legally blind, and I do see there's room to do more of those. And also to possibly expand those into other venues beyond just putting them on our website or having a teleconference call. Another way to share these stories is to put it in a YouTube channel or a Facebook page, a hosted video interview. Well, the agency, actually has a YouTube channel. So maybe put it in, you know, going into the future to maybe look at video creation for one of these types of things or more. Another recommendation, which I already highlighted on, is that they look at the continue to reach out to eye doctors to achieve outreach to visually impaired people from Connecticut, and sharing success stories is another way to reach out to eye doctors. They have here a statement that says the solution to lack of engagement may be to provide frequent updates to clients via email and social media to let them know about the events and programs that Fesby offers. Fesby should continue to increase its online offers and develop new virtual events to engage clients. One example of a virtual offer could be recorded interviews to scheduled events with VR clients who have successful outcomes mentioned in the previous question. Another example is hosting virtual meetings over Zoom or WebEx or similar applications for VR clients to meet with each other and discuss their challenges in seeking an appointment or navigating through the pandemic. So I thought that was another one. And then in regards to Career Index Plus, which is a tool that we use to help clients for self-directed online career exploration, one suggestion is Spencer to develop a pamphlet describing Career Index Plus to be distributed by eye doctors and other medical professionals. Learning about this product would encourage individuals with visual impairments to seek out best services. So I thought that was a very good recommendation. And then it says that you should continue to seek online career opportunities to be our clients, helping them adapt to the workplace and broaden their potential reach on the job market, which again speaks to the activities we're working on right now with these other states. And it says also that Fesby should further refine plans to provide necessary services to their particularly vulnerable clients while following social distancing guidelines. And another recommendation is make additional efforts to equip and train VR clients with technology to prepare them for the virtual work and education. And it says Fesby should supplement resources by contracting with a company to provide adaptive technology, as well as providing training to use the devices. An example of the community partners, Community for the Blind, which is studying computers for the blind, which I mentioned, you know, we have already parties do it. In addition to providing adaptive technology, they aim to provide training in its use. And they mentioned Oak Hill as one of the training providers through the Assistive Technology Center. And I think we agree completely. It's more in the DGC category of training. And then this was an interesting one. This is their final recommendation in the report, which actually is outside of the purview of Oak Rehab. But it was an important thing that I wanted to mention. Look into arranging housing for VR clients who struggle to find secure housing. This is actually something that our adult services program has been collaborating with other community partners to try to work on. So while this isn't necessarily the charge of the Voc Rehab program, it certainly acknowledged in their summary that folks need to have secure housing. They need to have a place to live and feel safe and secure.